This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
One way to limit the coronavirus impact on perceived economic performance in China. I'm David Brancaccio. The first official Chinese economic survey covering this new year is out, and it was at first glance mildly upbeat given the coronavirus. China's Purchasing Managers Index fell only slightly. But hold your horses. Christopher Lowe is the chief economist at FTN Financial and has a kind of economic data detective tale for us today.
I can tell you what people expected going in was that both manufacturing and service activity would be sharply lower. So we were surprised when the numbers came out last night. First surprise because it's a few days early. They are not supposed to be released until Sunday, but then surprised because manufacturing activity was just barely slower. But service activity picked up. It actually accelerated.
All right, but wait a second here. I mean, is there some fine print to this thing?
Well, yeah, it took a little while to find it, but the first tip-off is that the month isn't over yet. Turns out the government made an arbitrary decision to cut off the survey on January 20th, so we're missing the last third of the month. To put that into some perspective, January 23rd is the day when officials began taking the virus seriously. That's when Wuhan was closed, the airport and trains were shut down in Wuhan. It was a few days after that that other cities in Hubei province were closed.
Okay. Well, we'll at least place an asterisk over this Chinese data. Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, David.
The European Banking Authority today will run grim scenarios to see how European banks would fare in a downturn. Critics say Europe's stress tests are too easy, as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports.
Ever since the financial crisis, European regulators have taken a one-size-fits-all approach, says economist Ken Rogoff at Harvard.
It's a very complex, diverse financial system, and trying to have a one-size-fits-all stress test is hard to do.
To solve that, regulators are essentially proposing two stress tests, one that they'd run and the other from the banks themselves. Doug Redeker at the Brookings Institution says you'd think that would let them break the rules.
In fact, I would argue they're being designed to address an existing set of practices in which they're doing a very good job of trying to break the rules.
Because the current stress tests are designed to apply to the entire continent, Redeker says banks have figured out ways to game the system.
To find ways to technically comply, but not achieve the point of the exercise in the first place.
By giving banks more control over their tests, he says regulators will get a better sense of an individual bank's strengths and weaknesses. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
What are we now, 8 hours or so from the moment the United Kingdom formally exits the European Union? Tons of tough choices ahead as the UK figures out a trading relationship with the EU and the US. And what about the millions of EU workers who live there? Here's my Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig.
The smell of freshly baked cinnamon buns wafting out of Scandi Kitchen beckons Londoners in off the rainy streets. Inside, behind a colorful display of traditional open-faced sandwiches, are the cafe's workers, many of whom hail from Europe. They're part of an estimated 3 million EU citizens living in the UK, and they have until June 2021 to register for the UK's Settled Status Scheme. That allows EU nationals who have been living in the UK to continue doing so after Brexit.
As a business owner, it's my responsibility to make sure that the people who work here have their settled status in time. I think I should be all right with that.
That's cafe owner Bronte Orrell, who herself came to live in the UK in 2001. It's that responsibility to make sure her employees are legally permitted to live and work in this country that made her set up a Buns in Brexit session last year. The goal was to help people start their settled status paperwork. The response, she says, was overwhelming.
So there was three of us. We processed about 100 applications on that day in 5 hours. And actually, it was much more about the human story. It was, I'm really scared. I'm worried. What if it's a no? I've been here for 30 years. What's the best route for me to do this?
Early technical glitches and confusion over requirements to apply turned many off from the process. But Julia Mokhtader, an immigration expert at the law firm Stone King, stressed that while the responsibility is on individuals now, after Brexit, it's on employers.
It will be the responsibility of the employer to ensure that all of their right to work checks are up to date.
If paperwork isn't compliant, businesses could face a more than $25,000 penalty for unlawful employment.
So our advice to employers now is that they should be supporting and assisting their employees to make sure that they're aware of their requirement to register under the settlement scheme, and also that employers get evidence of that so that they're ready.
Back at Scandi Kitchen, Ms. Orrell and her volunteers are gearing up for another Buns in Brexit session. So far, they've helped initiate more than 300 settled status applications since the first workshop in September.
And we'll continue as long as there is a need. It's really important that people are looked after, and it seems that, well, if nobody else is doing it, then we will.
The next session is Saturday, when Ms. Orrell and her team hope to answer questions one cinnamon bun at a time. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Now, it is my New Year's resolution to revisit the core economic principles that govern so much of life in what we're calling Econ Extra Credit. You can participate too. At marketplace.org, there is a handy sign-up button toward the top of the screen. I am David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.